Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Professor Vi T and the E.J. Arso College of Business at LSU have been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years and has recently been focusing his attention on AI. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me again. It's great to be talking about these issues again.
I remember, I got to give you the warning to keep it on an eighth grade level so I don't get dizzy, okay?
You got it.
Let's talk about, before we get into AI and so forth, what's going on with DeepSeek? Because I think a lot of people heard about it. They know of it. They don't really know about it, though.
Sure, absolutely. And that's why it's actually interesting that this came out during the process between when we booked and when this actually interview actually happened.
Well, we knew Professor. It was the deep state put it together. We knew all that was going to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this was a big deal, and you can see that how the market reacted. There's a huge sell-off over the past few days, and really, the big deal about this approach is it was really the biggest AI development outside of the United States. So in essence, what happened was the Chinese-based artificial intelligence company went about and created a version of almost like ChatGPT, but at a fraction of the cost of what the competitors are doing inside of America. So they created a much cheaper version of ChatGPT, essentially.
So were they able to do it? The first question comes in my mind. Were they able to do it at a fraction of a cost because of technology that they stole from the people in America?
Okay, so this is an interesting question right now, because there's a lot of questions that are being raised about how they went about and did this.
There has been, Professor, to interrupt for a second, there has been one heck of a problem with the Chinese stealing our technology, right?
Oh, 100%. And so there's some allegations right now. We know that the CHIPS Act, which was passed a number of years ago, said that any AI that's produced in America had to be using chips that were made in America as well. And so we know that the greatest manufacturer of AI chips today is NVIDIA. So the question is, how was the Chinese company able to produce this in the absence of these chips? So there's some allegations out there that they may have been smuggled in, that they were, in fact, using our chips. We don't, again, these are allegations. We don't know if these are true or not. We also don't know if the way in which that they trained, the cost that they're publicly saying is actually accurate, and there may have been some fudging of the numbers when it comes to that. But regardless, the performance was at a rate that is equivalent to the lower version of ChatGPT. Now, to be clear, they haven't achieved the thresholds that we see in the higher-end models that we're using, but the fact that they could do it for how cheap that they were able to do it, allegedly, is really what caused a lot of panic.
Hi, Professor. Well, I think that clears it all up. I don't have any other questions. Thanks.
Right?
No, absolutely not. Let's start with, has this thing been demonstrated, or is this something that China says they have and that works, or have people seen it work?
So I would not recommend this, highly do not recommend this, but you can actually go on the App Store or on the web and actually play around with it as well.
You can, but the professor's not recommending it, just to be clear. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. And the reason for that is that all that data, anything that you put into that AI, any query, any search, anything that happens inside of that will be fed back to the Chinese government. So it is being used to funnel information, and your information is not private when you hit that, when you go to that particular AI.
All right, let me ask you an 8th grade question. How is that different than TikTok?
Okay, hence it's the same exact thing.
Okay.
And if we look at it, that's a lot of the critique that you're hearing around the current version of the TikTok ban bill, which is not really a TikTok ban bill. It's a divestiture bill. So the question is going to be, are they going to update this to also include this new AI approach as well? And which is interesting, because if you remember the last time that you and I even talked, I even brought up the question that one of my biggest concerns was was the creation of AI and being manipulated by foreign governments. Mm-hmm. It happened quicker than I thought it would, but it actually came into being something you and I had talked about before.
And we're going to recap some of that, because certainly people don't remember a conversation we had when you were on last time. I'm going to open the Open Heart Jeweler talking text line here, because I got to believe people listening have a lot of questions, as do I, at 504-260-1870. And at this point in our AI discussion, I just want to let people know there are no dumb questions, because a lot of us are still just trying to understand what AI is. And maybe, Professor, that'd be a good thing to talk about right now. For people that hear about AI, they're not quite sure what it is, what it does. Take us through it, would you?
Sure. Let's start with a very basic a basic understanding. So what is AI? AI stands for artificial intelligence. It's been studied for well over 50 years. And the concept was whether or not you can make a computer or a machine act intelligent. In the 50s, there was a famous professor of computer science named Turing. And Turing said the moment in which you interact with a technology and you can't tell whether it's technology or a person is the moment in which we can deem a machine to be intelligent. Mm-hmm. So the moment in which you can't tell whether or not you're interacting with a machine or a person is when we can deem there to be, quote unquote, artificial intelligence.
All right. So that's not necessarily scary. That could be even putting putting a computer program into a piece of machinery to cut out a wheel for a car or something like that?
Think about another example. Think about something like Alexa or a Google Home when you're talking to it. If it's able to carry on a conversation with you, then it can be considered intelligent.
Okay.
Now, if we kind of think about this, though, you know, I don't know about your Alexa, but mine's not that bright. So I'll ask it to do stuff, and it'll halfway do stuff, or it may forget along the way, right? Mm-hmm. So it never really hit that threshold. But when ChatGPT came out, it was conversational. So we were having a conversation with essentially AI, and it was in laboratories. This was the first AI that really ever passed the Turing test. People couldn't tell that they were interacting with ChatGPT. They thought there was a person on the other side of that.
My Alexa? Doc, my VCR is still blinking 12, and I know that's an old joke, and I know nobody has VCRs anymore, and that's what makes the joke even, to me, more applicable. Tell me about ChatGPT, time frame on that, when it really became, I guess, usable or came online?
Right. So really, it's about 18 months ago when ChatGPT 3 came out. That was the first time we really saw that happen. But what's really interesting is what most people don't know is that ChatGPT actually existed as a concept as far back as 2017 and 2018. That's really where the genesis of really it came to be. But it took all those years in order for us to get to the point where it was commercially ready to be launched. And going back to the Chinese AI, that's the other intriguing part of this process, was it took us so many years to get to this point, and allegedly they caught up this quickly. So there's a lot of questions that remain to be answered here as well.
Yeah, you would have to smell a rat somewhere, wouldn't you?
Oh, 100%. There's a lot more to it. So over the last 18 months, we've seen these models improve. It was really interesting, and what I thought we were going to see really define this coming year was at the end of last year, Sam Altman, who's the CEO of OpenAI, which creates ChatGPT, he actually came out and said that he believes we're going to get to a point in the next year or two where these machines will not only will hit a threshold that he called super intelligence, which is essentially they'll become able to have intelligence that goes beyond what we are able to even see right now.
And what's the time frame on that?
So he was saying sometime this year, and even over the last few days, they've now released a new version of their AI that can act autonomously. In essence, basically you can train it, and it can do tasks for you. Now, what this looks like and how this is going to work, we haven't been able to really get our hands on it yet, but we're going to start to see over this year, next year, ahead of us, where an AI can almost act like an autonomous agent, and you make it to a point in your workplace where you're working alongside of AI and not know that it's AI that's actually executing certain tasks.
Wow. Does AI beget AI beget AI beget AI, and then it starts speeding up exponentially like that?
So if we look at the pace of innovation, we're seeing the pace really, truly take off. And if we go back to the question you raised earlier, which is, what is AI? So the way that AI works is you take data and you take a bunch of information and you feed it into algorithms, or in this case, a neural network. And the neural network goes out and tries to discover or make sense of or learn the data that you've been providing to it. So in order for, if you think about it, like for AI to live and breathe, it needs data, and it needs a whole lot of data. Mm-hmm. So the question that's being asked right now by a lot of us is, what happens when we run out of data to feed AI? What does AI do at that point? And as of yet, we don't really have a clear indication of what's going to happen as well.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Well,
you're breaking up. I think the AI is starting to cut you off.
Yeah,
you said
is.
No, but what happens when it runs out of data? You broke up a little bit. What were you saying?
No one knows, and we don't know if we're going to run out of data. But what we are going to start to see is right now, if you think about like ChatGPT, it was only really trained on data that was written. So it was trained on Reddit and trained on the web on just basic websites. What we're also starting to see is new modes of training. In other words, can I train it on video or audio? Can I make songs? And I think you're starting to see some of those kinds of products come out as well. Google's released a new video product where they can help you make a commercial or make videos based upon prompts, and it's similar to how you are able to ask questions of it verbally as well.
All right, let me take a break. We come back. You can answer some of the questions that are coming in. One of them is, how could we ever run out of data or data? Is it data or data?
Either's fine.
Okay. How could we ever run out of data to feed AI? We're talking fascinating conversation, and this is the future, and it's grown exponentially in the last 18 months. There's AI again jumping in. AI, professor, you know, you never can tell, man. It's out there. Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT and EJR So College of Business at LSU. He's been researching technology-related issues for 20 years, recently been focusing his attention on AI. Between the time that we booked him and the time that he came on, this whole DeepSeek thing broke. And we're going to continue to dig into this. Also, somebody wants to know what's in the NVIDIA chip. We'll talk about that and more questions. Keep them coming. 504-260-1870. Tommy Tucker talking AI back in a flash on WWL. Interesting hour with Andrew Schwartz. Well, almost an hour. Professor of IT over at LSU. He's been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. Recently been focusing his attention on AI. And Professor, you've been designated our official go-to guy when it comes to AI, all right?
I like the role. I appreciate the honor. It's an honor.
So here we go. How could AI run out of data to feed it? I don't quite understand how that could happen or what that means.
Yeah, sure. So if you think about data, right, a lot of the stuff on the web is copyrighted or it has intellectual property around it. So there's a real concern that they're going to run out of data that's not protected in some capacity. And so that's what really has sparked this concern about data.
Yeah.
Is this running out of data that's freely available?
Before we find artificial intelligence, maybe we should find some real one. Anyway, let's talk about some of the texts that are coming in here. iPhones are manufactured in China, as are most phones. How does that go into NVIDIA chips that are made here? How do we know the Chinese aren't tapping, for want of a better phrase, Professor, all of our iPhones? Take me through all of that, please.
Yes, sure. So from a supply chain perspective, Apple uses their own M chip, and that M chip is produced in America. Okay. So they segregate how that's installed and put together to ensure that there's that data doesn't get leaked to the government in China.
So the M like M as in M&M?
Yes.
The M chip is made here and is installed in the phone here after the rest of it is put together in China. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. That way they can prevent that from occurring.
All right. How is an M chip different from a NVIDIA chip?
Okay, so these are all just different chips, and they have different sizes, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about like your computer versus your tablet, you know they all have chips in them, but the nature of how powerful those chips have to be and the size is dictated by the form factor. So of course, with our phones, they have to be smaller. So it's just a different size and different objective of what they're trying to accomplish. If you think about like the NVIDIA chip, what makes them so special? The reason why they're so special is when you're training data, when you're trying to find those patterns in the data, which is what AI is doing, it needs to consider the data all at once. So it has to have a lot of processes that are going on at the same time. So that what they've done in the chip is so unique because it can handle those core processes in parallel. Whereas if you think about like your phone, it doesn't have to process as much at one time. So the demands upon it aren't as high.
So when it comes to, let me take a step back here because somebody just texted in. This got my attention, said, whoa, there was that many woes. What's a chip? And maybe we need to go back to that because some people don't know, Professor, and perhaps I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So a computer chip is almost like the memory inside of your computer. So there's like your hard drive, which is persistent memory, which means it always remembers. It always remembers. So you can turn your computer off and turn it back on. So that's enduring kind of data. But then there's also data that is like very temporary. So let's say you go into, a word processing software and you copy and paste. That goes into a different kind of memory, and that memory is the chip. So the chip can remember things. The chip can direct, like when you let's say that you click your mouse and you type something on your keyboard. The chip keeps track of what order that occurred in and what needs to happen first versus everything else. So it's your memory, and it's almost like your quarterback that runs all the different elements of your computer.
Would it be analogous to or the same as the hard drive, or not really?
Yeah, so the hard drive is going to be that long-lasting kind of memory, and so that's actually if you're to open it up, you see it's almost like a series of an old throwback, almost like a series of records that are on our plates that are on top of each other. That's the more long-term memory. So the chips are going to be a lot smaller than that.
What is this thing? What is it? What is it made of? What is it?
It's made of silicon.
Because it's changing human life, right, on the Earth. So I think we may as well know what it is. It's what, a piece
100%.
Of glass? Is it? What is it?
So they're typically made of silicon. So and then they have different other elements in it that allow that to have that memory and have that capacity, to execute all those commands as well.
All right. So somebody wants to know: are we talking about DeepSeek, ChatGPT, TikTok, all three, just one? What are the differences? And I know we kind of addressed that, but go ahead.
Sure. So the deep AI is analogous to ChatGPT. So think about those two as basically the same product. One's American-based, one's Chinese-based. TikTok, however, is more like a social media platform. It's very similar to like an Instagram or like a YouTube Shorts or like a Facebook Reels. That's more what TikTok is like.
Okay. So when it comes to the Chinese and DeepSeek and running out of data to feed it and proprietary stuff, China doesn't care about proprietary this or that or the other thing, because again, when it comes to the development of DeepSeek, we all kind of think there was a rat involved to begin with, right?
Right, 100%. And the reason, so you say, well, you know, why are you so concerned? Like, what is it that I'm concerned about? The reality is that your data lost, you lose all privacy. And not only that, but if you're on TikTok and you actually send a direct message to another TikTok member, almost, you know, like a private message, mm-hmm. all that data is stored. And they have access to all the conversations that you have all that you have had. The Chinese have, they keep track of every single conversation of every video you watch, of everything as well. And that's the concern over something like TikTok, is that not only are they, and you say, well, I'm not that exciting of a person, and that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not, but I also have concerns that it could be used for blackmail and other nefarious purposes as well, once they learn that much about you.
So that's the next question I had, which is, okay, you have it. What are you going to do with it? It would seem to me just the amount of data with all of the people on TikTok all over the world, not just in the United States. Is there an artificial intelligence application to keep track of all of this data and to discern things from it?
And there absolutely is, and that's the concern, is we don't know what they're doing with it. If the intriguing part is that TikTok is growing at 23% a year on average, but yet the United States only is about 20% of their user base. So the net, if they were to like roll out of the United States at this point, the reality is in a year with the market that's growing as it is, they'd be fine without us. So they don't necessarily need us.
So when it comes to the information that, well, let me take a break here because we've got traffic and then we'll pick it up. We come back. 504-260-1870. If you don't have any questions for Professor Andrew Schwartz about AI, you're not listening or you're not paying attention, because I got about 1,000 more of them, and you can text yours in 504-260-1870. DeepSeek is what China developed, and it rivals ChatGPT. I don't want to hurt myself here, Professor. That's right.
100% right. You're doing good.
And it rivals that, but the questions are, how did the Chinese develop this if they couldn't get the NVIDIA chips that are needed or that were needed to develop it here? Accurate?
100% accurate.
Okay,
good question.
940, 20 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 944, 16 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our AI go-to guy, Professor Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT and EJ Arso College of Business at LSU. You know, you gotta just think about the name DeepSeek AI, if it's not like a tongue-in-cheek name, huh, Professor? Wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely a dig in there for sure.
If
right?
It's not an inside joke or something. Somebody texted in, ask the professor, do you think the Chinese government means American or anybody who uses TikTok any good? What's the nightmare scenario? I think what they're asking is, can any good, is there an end game here? And I guess the question is that I have, is China just out there just gathering everything they can, cast a wide net, who knows what we might find? Or is there an end game here and they're looking for something specific with a long-term strategy? What's the long game here?
They're very strategic in what they're doing. I mean, this is definitely an attempt, without getting into politics too much, mm-hmm. Where if you can begin to take a population of people and control the flow of information in the population, then you exert far more control than you can in any other capacity. So there's subtle ways that they're manipulating and creating this kind of level of control with TikTok and now with this AI as well.
Tell me about that.
So, if you look at, for example, a study came out and looked at, I'm using TikTok just as a surrogate because it's a good example. But as an example, if you looked at the average videos on TikTok, for example, they looked at TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram, and they found that on TikTok that there were more pro-Palestinian videos during the conflict, and they were pro-Israel. Mm-hmm. So there's an agenda there, and they're pushing out content in which they control the algorithm, and they control what we see. So there's a potential way to manipulate us as a population with that kind of approach and that kind of algorithm.
So President Trump, not getting political here, but he is the president, said he considered DeepSeek to be very much a positive development for AI overall, because instead of spending billions and billions, you'll spend less and you'll come up with hopefully the same solution. And he was saying that he's also said the release of DeepSeek AI from a Chinese company should be a wake-up call for our industries that we need to be laser-focused on competing. Thoughts on that?
He's correct in that if this holds to be true, and that's why I said if it does hold to be true, where they're able to train it on the dollar amount that they're claiming, it is going to send shockwaves, because it does have implications for market caps and market valuations of what we've seen for these companies, as well as market manipulation if these chips are being overpriced the way that potentially they are. Again, there's a long way to go in this conversation before I'm going to arrive at that conclusion, but it's definitely sent some interesting shockwaves through the system as we consider these issues.
And you started the segment by talking about a huge sell-off with the tech stocks, and I guess when you talk about market capitalization, you're talking about an artificially high price on the chips from NVIDIA. Is that what you're saying or not?
That's the allegation that we're going to find out if this holds to be true or not. Again,
proprietary, it's almost like medicine. They can charge whatever they want, right?
Yeah, right. And that's the concern that we're going to see if DOJ steps in at some point over the next few years. Because if you look at the penetration of the market share that NVIDIA has, it's encroaching upon a monopoly. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to see if that gets investigated over the next few years or not.
But at that point, you're on a line, a fence between commerce and national security, are you not?
You are indeed. And so, again, you and I have talked before about the need for regulation, and you can start to see why this holds to be true. And I have some sources that have told me that there's a proposal or a consideration to put AI within the realm of the DOJ as a potential way of regulation. If it becomes a national security kind of issue, then DOJ should be best suited to kind of look at that issue. Again, I'm not a political person, but that's a possibility.
But you also have constitutional concerns here, because at some point you're talking about free speech, right?
Oh, 100%. And so there's a case pending right now that I think is going to define a lot of what happens. There was a young man who was interacting with an AI bot, and the AI bot encouraged him to commit suicide. Mm. And unfortunately, he did. Mm. Of course, the mom is now suing the AI company. And the question is, are they protected or not? Because they didn't program that bot to say that, but it did. So are they going to be held liable or not? This is where the free speech issue is going to come out. They're claiming free speech, that their bot had free speech. But does it? Again, this is going to be a big ethical question that we're going to wrestle with as we move ahead.
So the only way I can turn my mind off, Professor, and I had to explain this to somebody doing some work in my house the other day, explain to them what I did for a living so they didn't think I was an idiot, a grown man sitting there watching Looney Tunes. That's the only way I can turn my brain off. That's the only way I can escape from everything, given the job that I have. And the only reason I bring that up is I'm thinking about, you know, a cartoon with a box and a stick and a carrot underneath it and a string tied to the box, to the stick, rather. And I'm wondering, do we really need to use AI? Do we need that carrot? Or are we being led into it by those who would do us harm? We do it just because it's there. We use it just because it's there. But are we opening ourselves up to something we don't really need?
Okay, so it's interesting you raise this question. It's also interesting about what you said about watching cartoons. And I actually think that strikes what I view as a tremendous opportunity, which is, if I talked before about these agents and who could help us with our work. Mm-hmm. Imagine if certain aspects of our job we could relegate to AI, so we could actually sit there and watch cartoons without worrying or feeling guilty, that we can turn ourselves off. that maybe we work as a society far more than we should. Maybe this gives us a chance to see some positives. And speaking of positives, I'll give you an example. I was talking yesterday to our guest speakers coming in. I'm going to put a pitch in here. We're having an AI day at LSU here coming up in mid-February. We're going to be talking about the broad impacts of AI. And our speaker who's coming in was the creator of Siri. So he and I were talking yesterday, and he was talking about how AI is starting to make inroads into helping with dementia. And I actually lost my dad about a month ago to dementia. So when I see something like that, I think, wow, that's a tremendous opportunity. And he says some neurosurgeons are saying that they're at a point where using AI, they're coming up with approaches that may be able to stop or maybe even able to reverse some of the effects of dementia. Again, this is very early work, but that's where AI can have such a great potential influence on us as well.
I'm sorry for your loss, and I lost a family member to Alzheimer's, and people don't realize how devastating it can be and how dehumanizing it is and just how terrible of a disease it is. I don't know how else to put it. So there are positive applications of this. So does that then, Professor, mean that maybe there should be limited access to it?
So what it means is we need education. And again, I know I'm a broken record on this one, but if we can begin to have conversations like you and I are having and begin to talk about these things and bias and potential negatives as well as the positives, then we can have a more of a realistic assessment of what it can and can't do and the limitations of it. So that's where I see such opportunity and promise. And if you look at the state is beginning to really make inroads. I mean, it's tremendous. If you look at the Meta data center and the HUD 8 data center, both huge data centers, the data center for Meta is going to be the biggest in the world, and it's here in Louisiana. These are 500 direct jobs that are going to be focused around AI and data center operations. And if we can educate our people so that they don't have to bring in someone from the outside, from outside Louisiana to run these things, imagine what can happen to our state with the opportunities that are in front of us.
And the other challenge is to regulate it without the politics and using it to your political advantage and do what's best for everybody, which is always a challenge. Professor, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Hope you come back.
Always.
Thank you, sir. You bet, because you're our go-to guy. Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT, EJ Arso College of Business at LSU, talking about AI. 9:53, we'll take a break, see what Newell's got for us when we come back on WWL.